Jackpots can help you create more wealth because the key to creating wealth is to unleash your creativity and find a way to do more for others than anyone else is doing. If you find a way to add more value than anyone else, you can also find a way to prosper personally. That can apply to your own life as well as the lives of others. Remember what we talked about in the chapters of speeding up your plan? If you wish to be great, learn to become the servant of many. We already know that life supports what supports more life, and by supporting life, you lift yourself up as well, and more bounty comes to you. Give yourself peace of mind. You deserve to be happy. You deserve delight. Hannah Arendt. So how do you fill your dream bucket? Let's talk about three ways. First, when you score a big hit, like that $10,000 bonus we were talking about earlier in the last chapter. Or second, if your risk/growth bucket gets a positive hit and you score big, just like in Vegas, it might be time to take some of the risk off of the table. An approach many of my students use is to take those profits, divide them up, and invest them back in a fixed proportion, say one-third in security, one-third in risk/growth, and one-third in dream. In the case of that bonus, that would be about $3,333 for your dream bucket. By putting one-third of your risk/growth bucket money into security, it's like taking money off the table to help speed the growth of your most secure investments, and with it, your peace of mind. By leaving one-third in growth, you continue to take risks with a potential larger upside, but you're doing it with your winnings. By putting one-third in your dream bucket, you're creating a jackpot that you can enjoy today. This will stimulate and excite you in ways that will likely cause you to want to earn more, save more, and invest even more effectively, because of the rewards today, not just someday in the future. The third way to fill your dream bucket is to save a set percentage of your income and sock it away, building it up until you're able to purchase your dreams, whether that be your first home, a car, a vacation, or those fun little items that will light you up today. But keep in mind, this is not taking any money out of what you are already saving for your freedom fund. That's sacred and untouchable money. But you can find ways to increase the amounts you can put in your freedom fund and your dream bucket. Here's a quick reminder from the Speed It Up chapters. Save more and invest the difference. Earn more and invest the difference. Reduce fees and taxes and invest the difference. Get better returns. Change your lifestyle. So you can take some of those savings to invest and some of those savings to make your dreams a reality today or in the near future. What will be your strategy to fill this bucket? Will you wait for a bonus or a stock market score, or will you set aside a percentage like my friend Angela? At first, she thought she had no money she could possibly save even toward her financial freedom. But by the time she went through the process of this book, she saw that relocating to Florida would save her enough money in state income tax that she could now set aside 10% of her income for her freedom fund and still earmark an additional 8% for her dream bucket. The tax man was now filling her dream bucket. How cool is that? Plus, she's got better weather, too. She went through her accounts and figured out a way to become even more tax efficient to be able to put an additional 2% into her freedom fund for a total of 12%. On top of the 8% she was saving toward her dreams. If you would have told her in the beginning that she would have found a way to save 20%, she would have said you were absolutely crazy. But today, she not only has her future secured, but she's also saving for some important dreams in the short term that excite her. Hiking in the Himalayas and rowing across the ocean. Her degree is in anthropology, and she's always dreamed of spending time with famed paleontologist Louise Leakey at her institute in Kenya. She was even invited. She just doesn't have the money right now. But if she sticks to her fiscally sound plan, she will. How cool to be able to be financially secure and independent, and at the same time, live this life of adventure. Remember the strategy of save more tomorrow? You can decide that in your next salary increase, maybe 3% could go to your freedom fund and maybe 1.5 or 2% could go to your dream fund, especially if there are some dreams that are important to you now, like saving for the down payment on your first home or vacation getaway. There are so many ways to do it. But let me tell you the secret. The most important thing is to make a list of your dreams Put them in order of importance, big and small, short-term and long-term. Write down why you must achieve them or experience them. I've found that if you try to figure out a percentage to save without really knowing what you're saving for, it's not going to happen. The secret is to know what you truly want and why you want it, and make it a burning passion. Suddenly your creativity will unleash, and you'll find new ways to earn more, to save more, to add more value, to become more tax efficient, to become a better investor, or to go through a lifestyle change that improves your life and gives you some of your dreams today, and not in the future. That's the key to it all. But decide today. Take a moment now and make a list of your dreams. Write them down so they become real to you. How much would you be willing to save for them? Get excited and get started. Every great dream begins with a dreamer. Harriet Tubman. In the end, what percentage of your total assets do you think should go in your dream bucket? It doesn't have to be much, maybe as little as 5% or 10%. But please don't forget to reward yourself. While it's important to keep your money safe and growing, never forget to have fun, to give, and to live your life fully on your path to financial freedom. That's what it's all about. Don't save your dream bucket for a rainy day. Why not get out and soak up the sunshine? If you don't, you could end up like a couple that a friend of mine told me about. They scrimped and saved their whole lives, then finally decided they had enough to afford a fantastic Caribbean cruise. It was a week-long trip on one of those giant cruise liners hopping around the islands. You can picture it. The ship had swimming pools, a climbing rock, dozens of restaurants and discos. The couple was so excited, but they still wanted to be prudent with their capital since they'd worked so hard to save for their retirement. They didn't want to spend extra money on the lavish meals. The trip by itself was a big enough splurge for them. So to save money, they loaded their suitcases with boxes of cheese and crackers to snack on during the cruise and vowed to avoid those expensive dinners. The weather was perfect, and the couple had a great time with all the activities on board. But every lunch and dinner, when everybody else was eating incredible feasts served up on huge buffet tables, shrimp, lobster, prime rib, mountains of desserts and fine wines from around the world, the two of them went back to their room and ate the cheese and crackers. They didn't mind. They were enjoying the trip of a lifetime, and they were proud of themselves for being frugal. But on the last day, they finally broke down and decided to splurge and have a magnificent final dinner upstairs. So they tucked into one of those amazing buffets and piled their plates with the best food they'd had in their lives. After having multiple desserts and drinking wine, they asked the waiter for the bill. And with an astonished look on his face, he said, "What bill?" They said the bill for this magnificent dinner, the wine, desserts, everything. The waiter turned to them with shock and said, "Didn't you know the meals come with the trip?" The meals came with the trip. How's that for a metaphor? So don't settle for cheese and crackers on this journey. Enjoy everything that comes with it. And one more reminder. So much of what makes us wealthy is free. Remember what Sir John Templeton told us earlier. The secret to wealth is gratitude. It's not just what we achieve or accomplish. It's what we appreciate. It's not just the adventure of a cruise. It's what we take the time to enjoy. You can find an adventure and joy in those you love, the dancing eyes of your children, or the joyous faces of those you love. There are jackpots everywhere if you wake up to the beauty of your life today. So don't vow to someday get beyond scarcity. Start beyond it. Realize how lucky you are and all the wealth you possess in love, joy, opportunities, health, friends, and family. Don't get rich. Start rich. So far, we've learned how to allocate our investments among different types and classes of assets, and to put chunks of money in separate buckets for security slash peace of mind and for risk slash growth. We've learned we also need to set aside another chunk of money for a dream bucket that will add juice to our lives as we build our wealth and incentives to do better for ourselves and others. So now we have one final, brief chapter to teach you a set of three simple skills that can increase your returns 1% to 2% per year, and more importantly, make certain you avoid the mistakes so many people make by trying to time the market. Let's learn from the power of knowing. Chapter 4.4. Timing is Everything. We have met the enemy, and he is us. Pogo. What's the secret of success for investors and stand-up comedians? Timing. It's everything. The best comics know exactly when to deliver a punchline, and the smartest investors know just when to enter the market, except for when they don't. Even the best of all the best fail to hit every beat every single time. For a comedian, a mistake in timing results in an embarrassing, deathly silence in the house and maybe a few thrown objects. But if you're an investor, a mistake in timing can destroy your nest egg. So we need a solution that doesn't require us to be a psychic. We've already seen how diversifying your portfolio across different asset classes and across different markets can protect you in a volatile economy. But haven't we all had the experience of being at the right place or doing exactly the right thing, but at the wrong time? So by now you might be thinking, okay, Tony, so now I know how to diversify my investments, but what if my timing is off? I've asked myself the same question. What if I put my money in the stock market at its peak and it starts dropping? Or if I buy into a bond fund and the interest rates begin to spike? Markets are always going to fluctuate, and we've learned that nobody, I mean nobody, can consistently and successfully predict when it's going to happen. So how do we protect ourselves from all the ups and downs and really succeed? Most investors get caught up in a kind of mob mentality that has them chasing winners and running away from losers. Mutual fund managers do the same thing. It's human nature to want to follow the pack, not to miss out on anything. Emotions get a hold of us, and we as investors tend to do very stupid things, the Princeton economist Burton Malkiel told me. We tend to put money into the market and take it out at exactly the wrong time. He reminded me of what happened during the tech bubble at the turn of the 21st century. More money went into the market in the first quarter of 2000, which turned out to be the top of the internet bubble, than ever before, he said. Then by the third quarter of 2002, when the market was way down, the money came pouring out. Those investors who bailed instead of riding out the slump missed out on one of the greatest upturns of the decade. Then, in the third quarter of 2008, which happened to coincide with the peak of the financial crisis, said Malkiel, more money went out of the market than ever, ever, ever before. So our emotions get a hold of us. We get scared. And who could blame anyone for being scared during that epic crash? In October 2008, after the stock market had lost more than $2 trillion in value, when hundreds of thousands of Americans were losing their jobs every month, Matt Lauer, NBC's Today Show, called my office. He asked me to come on the air the next morning to talk about what viewers could do to cope with the crisis. I'd known Matt for years and had been on his show a number of times, so of course I agreed. When I arrived on the set, his producer told me, okay, you've got 4 minutes to pump the country up. I thought, are you kidding me? Well, pumping people up is not what I do, I said. I tell them the truth. And that's what I did. I warned the Today Show audience in two different segments that the stock market meltdown was not over, that the worst could still be coming. How's that for pumping them up? Many stocks that were selling for $50 not long ago are selling for $10 or $5, and here's the truth. Some may go down to a dollar, I said, as news anchor Ann Curry's eyes grew wider and wider. But I also told the viewers that instead of freaking out, they should fight their fears and educate themselves about people who had done well in tough times, like Sir John Templeton, who had made all his money when markets were crashing during the Great Depression. I said that if you studied history, you knew that there was a great chance, based on what happened in the 70s and even in the 30s, that in a short period, stocks that had gone down to $1 would go up again. They might not get back to $50 for a long time, but historically, many would jump to $5 in a few months. That's a 400% return, and it could happen in 6 months. If you stay strong and smart, and the market continues to recover, you could make 1,000% or more. This could be the greatest investment opportunity since you've been alive, I said. It was not exactly the message the Today Show expected to hear, but it turned out to be dead on. How did I know the market was going to keep dropping? Because I was so brilliant? Hardly. I wish I could say that. The reality was that my friend and client Paul Tudor Jones had been warning me about what was happening in the markets almost a year in advance of the crisis. He's one of those unicorns who can actually time the markets on a fairly consistent basis. It's part of what made him not only one of the most successful investors in history, but a legendary figure. He predicted the Black Monday crash of 1987, and when everyone else was freaking out, he helped his clients make a 60% monthly return and 200% for the year. So you can bet I was grateful for Paul's insights. In early 2008, he told me a stock market and real estate crash was coming, and soon. I was so concerned that I reached out to my Platinum Partners, an exclusive group of my clients who I work with 3 to 4 times a year in intimate, intensive sessions to transform their relationships, businesses, and finances. I called a surprise meeting and asked them all to fly and meet me in Dubai in April 2008 to warn them about the coming crisis and help them prepare for it. Remember, anticipation is power. With a 4 to 6 month jump, many of my clients were able to actually profit from one of the worst economic times in history. Yes, sure enough, stock prices plummeted throughout the last quarter of 2008. By March 2009, the market was so bad, Citigroup bank shares had dropped from a high of $57 to, you guessed it, as I had warned, 97 cents. You could literally own the stock for less than it costs you to take your money out of one of their ATMs. So what should an investor do in this extraordinary kind of situation? If you believe Sir John Templeton's motto, the best opportunities come in times of maximum pessimism, or Warren Buffett's mantra, be fearful when others are greedy, and be greedy when others are fearful. It was a time to scoop up bargains. Why? Because smart, long-term investors know that seasons always change. They'll tell you that winter is the time to buy, and the early months of 2009 were definitely winter. It's the time when fortunes can be made, because even though it may take a while, spring always comes. But what if you got scared, or felt you had to sell when the markets collapsed? You might say, Tony, what if I lost my job in 2008 and had no other source of income, or my kids' tuition was due and the banks wouldn't loan me any money? If you sold your stocks in 2008, all I can say is, I feel your pain, but I wish you could have found another way to make ends meet. Individual investors who liquidated their funds when the market plunged learned an agonizing lesson. Instead of riding the tide back up, they locked in their losses permanently. If and when they got back into stocks, they had to pay a much higher price because, as you know, the market roared back to life. Seeing so many people lose so much in such a short time and feeling the suffering that all this created is what started my obsession with wanting to bring the most important investment insights to the general public. It literally was the trigger for the birth of this book. It also made me search to see if the same level of financial intelligence that created high-frequency trading, where the HFT investors truly have the upside without the downside, could be harnessed in some way for the good of the average investor. Remember, the HFT investors make money and virtually never lose. So what's the good news? In the upcoming section of this book, Upside Without the Downside, Create a Lifetime Income Plan, you're going to learn there's a way for you to never leave the market yet never take a loss. Why? Because there are financial tools, insurance products to be specific, where you don't have to worry about timing at all. You make money when the market goes up, and when it goes down 10%, 20%, 30%, or even 50%, you don't lose a dime, according to the guarantees of the issuing insurance company. It sounds too good to be true, but in reality, it's the ultimate in creating a portfolio that truly offers you peace of mind. For now, let me show you 3 tools that can help you limit many of your investment risks and maximize your investment returns in a traditional investing format. The future ain't what it used to be. Yogi Berra. Prediction is very difficult, especially about the future. Niels Bohr. On March 2, 2009, Paul Tudor Jones told me that the market was hitting its absolute bottom. Prices would start rising again. Spring was coming. So I tweeted, "Markets are never wrong. Opinions are. the infamous trader Jesse Livermore. I am not a market timer. Best of luck, Tony. Educate yourself. Make your own decisions and only on investments you could afford to make. I am not dispensing advice, only advocate. Be aware. I coach one of top financial traders in world for 17 years now. Not giving trading advice, but do watch for possible bottom coming. Educate. By the way, it was the first time I ever tweeted any information on the potential direction of the stock market. As it turned out, only 7 days later, the U.S. stock exchange indexes did exactly that. It bottomed out on March 9th. Prices started gradually rising and then took off. And sure enough, Citigroup stocks, which were $1.05 on March 9, 2009, closed on August 27, 2009 at $5 a share, a 400% increase. What an incredible return you could have had if you'd managed your fear and bought when everyone else was selling. Now, I'd love to be able to say that past market behavior can predict the future, or that Paul Tudor or anyone else I know could continuously successfully forecast these market swings. But it is impossible. Based on analysis from those in the know, I put out another heads-up warning for potential challenges in 2010, this time on video, when it looked like the market was overextended and heading for another correction. I wanted people to make conscious decisions whether they wanted to protect themselves from the potential of another huge hit. But this time, we were wrong. Nobody could guess that the U.S. government would do something that no government has ever done in human history. It decided to prop up the markets by printing $4 trillion while telling the world it would continue to do so indefinitely, literally until the economy recovered. By magically adding zeros to its balance sheet, the Federal Reserve was able to pump cash into the system by buying back bonds, both mortgage-backed bonds and treasuries, from the big banks. This keeps interest rates unnaturally low and forces savers and anyone looking for some sort of return into the stock market. And the Fed kept doing it year after year. No wonder U.S. stocks never came down from that sugar high. So if you think you can time the markets, you're wrong. Even the best in the world can't do it every time because there will always be factors they can't predict. Like stock picking, it's best to leave market timing to the masterminds who employ large staffs of analysts, ones like Paul, who can also afford to be wrong because of the many different bets they place on the direction of the markets. But this does not mean you can't take advantage of the concept behind market timing, the opportunities of rising and falling markets, by applying a couple of simple but powerful principles that you're about to learn here. Both involve taking yourself out of the picture and automating your investment schedule. You can't control the market, but you can control what you pay, Burt Malkiel told me. You have to try to get yourself on automatic pilot so your emotions don't kill you. Far more money has been lost by investors preparing for corrections or trying to anticipate corrections than has been lost in corrections themselves. Peter Lynch. So what's an answer to the dilemma of timing? One of these techniques is as old as Warren Buffett's original teacher, Benjamin Graham, the dean of modern investing. Graham, who taught at Columbia Business School in the mid-20th century, championed a gutsy technique with a boring name, dollar-cost averaging. In fact, Buffett credits Graham with first coming up with the famous rules of investing, don't lose money. It's a system designed to reduce your chances of making the big investment mistakes we all fear, buying something right before it drops in price, or pulling out of an investment right before its price goes up. We've already learned the first two keys of asset allocation. Diversify across asset classes and diversify across markets. But remember, there's a third key. Diversify across time. And that's what dollar cost averaging does for you. Think of it as the way you activate your asset allocation plan. Asset allocation is the theory. Dollar cost averaging is how you execute it. It's how you avoid letting your emotions screw up the great asset allocation plan you've just put together by either delaying investing because you think the market's too high and you hope it will drop before you get in, or by ignoring or selling off the funds that aren't producing great returns at the moment. According to the many fans of dollar cost averaging, and that includes powerhouses like Jack Bogle as well as Burt Malkiel, it's the key to sleeping better at night, knowing your investments will not only survive unstable markets, but will continue to grow in the long term, no matter what the economic conditions. Sound great? All you need to do is make equal contributions to all of your investments on a set time schedule, either monthly or quarterly. Easy, right? But there are two challenges I have to warn you about. First, dollar-cost averaging is going to seem counterintuitive, and you might feel like you're going to be making less money using it. But I'll show in just a moment what's counterintuitive is actually to your advantage. Remember, the goal is to take emotion out of investing because the emotion is what so often destroys investing success, whether it's greed or fear. Second, there's been some recent debate about the long-term effectiveness of dollar-cost averaging, and I'll show you what both sides are saying. But first, let's talk about the most common way investors use it and its potential impact. When you invest on a set schedule with the same amount of money invested each month or week in exact accordance with your asset allocation plan, the fluctuations of the market work to increase your gains, not decrease them. If you have $1,000 to invest each month, and you have a 60% risk/growth and 40% security asset allocation, you're going to put $600 in your risk/growth bucket and $400 in your security bucket, regardless of what's happened to prices. Volatility through time can become your friend. This part might seem counterintuitive, but Burt Malkiel gave me a great example of how it works. Here's a great test. Take a moment and give me your best answer to this question. Suppose you're putting $1,000 a year into an index fund for 5 years. Which of these two indexes do you think would be better for you? Example 1. The index stays at $100 per share for the first year. It goes down to $60 the next year. It stays at $60 the third year. Then in the fourth year, it shoots up to $140. In the fifth year, ends up at $100, the same place where you started. Example 2. The market's at $100 the first year, $110 the second year, $120 the third year, $130 the fourth, and $140 the fifth year. So, which index do you think ends up making you the most money after 5 years? Your instincts might tell you that you'd do better in the second scenario with steady gains, but you'd be wrong. You can actually make higher returns by investing regularly in a volatile stock market. Think about it for a moment. In example 1, by investing the same amount of dollars you actually get to buy more shares when the index was cheaper at $60, so you owned more of the market when the price went back up. This means that after 5 years of investing $1,000 per year in a steadily rising market, your $5,000 turns into $5,915. Not bad. But in a volatile market, you make 14.5% more in profit, winding up with $6,048. The problem, Malkiel told me, is that most people don't let the first scenario work for them. When the market falls, they say, "Oh my God, I'm going to sell." So you have to keep your head and keep a steady course. Investors learned a hard lesson during the first 10 years of the 2000s, what's known in financial circles as the lost decade. If you put all your money into the U.S. stock market at the beginning of 2000, you got killed. $1 invested in the S&P 500 on December 31, 1999 was worth 90 cents by the end of 2009. But according to Burt Malkiel, if you had spread out your investments through dollar-cost averaging during the same time period, you would have made money. Malkiel authored a Wall Street Journal article titled, "Buy and Hold is Still a Winner," in which he explained that if you were diversified among a basket of index funds including U.S. stocks, foreign stocks, and emerging market stocks, bonds, and real estate, between the beginning of 2000 and the end of 2009, a $100,000 initial investment would have grown to $191,859. That's over 6.7% annually during a lost decade. Dollar-cost averaging is how you make the volatility of the market work for you, he told me. Everyone from Warren Buffett's mentor Benjamin Graham to Burt Malkiel and many respected academics certainly make a case for using dollar-cost averaging when you're investing a percentage of your steady stream of income. But if you have a lump sum to invest, it may not be the best approach. Dollar-cost averaging versus lump sum investing. What do you do if you have a sudden windfall, like that $10,000 bonus we talked about earlier in this section? Or what if you get a $50,000 insurance payout? Do you use dollar-cost averaging to invest it over a set time schedule of months or even years, or do you invest it in a lump sum? Here's where the controversy comes in. Some investment advisors have turned against dollar-cost averaging because, as even Burt Malkiel admits, it's not the most productive strategy for investing in the stock market when it keeps going straight up like it's been doing in the years following the recent Great Recession. You would have made more money by investing everything at the beginning of the bull market than if you had doled your money out over 5 years. That's obvious, right? And there had been recent studies, including one by Vanguard in 2012, showing that in rolling 10-year periods over the past 80 years in the U.S., U.K., and Australian stock markets, lump sum investing has outperformed dollar-cost averaging more than two-thirds of the time. Why is this true? Because you're putting more of your money to work sooner and over a longer period of time, and limiting your trading fees. One-time lump sum investing gives you the opportunity for greater potential growth, but also greater overall loss when markets drop. Research shows that lump sum investing over the long term, when successfully diversified, is more profitable. But by how much? In the end, the average increased returns were no more than 2.3% more. And remember the statistics that Burt Malkiel shared with us for the 2000 to 2010 lost decade period. In that case, if you had invested $1 in the S&P 500 in December 31, 1999, 10 years later, it was worth only 90 cents. But if you did dollar-cost averaging, you made money during that same period. What would you do? Would you plunk down the whole 10 grand as soon as you got it, or would you keep it in a more secure place and invest $1,000 a month over 10 months, or $50,000 over 2 years? If the market keeps going up and up, you might lose out on some gains. But behavioral economics tells us you won't have as much regret as you would if the market crashed 2 days after you invested it all. So it's totally up to you. Once again, I'm not here to give you my opinion, just the best insights available from the best experts. For most people, lump sum investing is not an issue because they don't have a significant sum to invest. If that's your situation, you'll still maximize your returns by investing in a diversified portfolio with dollar-cost averaging. What dollar-cost averaging really means is systematically putting the same amount of money across your full portfolio, not just the stock portion. Remember, volatility can be your friend with dollar-cost averaging, and it can also allow for another technique that will keep you on track called rebalancing, which we'll address in a moment. So what's the best way to put dollar-cost averaging to work for you? Luckily, most people who have 401ks or 403bs that automatically invest the same amount on a fixed time schedule already reap the benefits of dollar-cost averaging. But if you don't already have an automated system, it's easy to set one up. I have a self-employed friend who set up her own tax-advantaged retirement account with Vanguard, and she's instructed them to automatically deduct $1,000 every month from her bank account to distribute among her diversified index funds. She knows she might not always have the discipline to buy when one market feels too high or another drops too low, so she takes herself out of the picture. She's a long-term investor who doesn't worry about timing anymore because her system is automated and the decision is out of her hands. There's a way to make dollar-cost averaging even easier. And that's by setting up an account with Stronghold, where they'll do this for you automatically. Also remember, in the next section, I'll show you an extraordinary tool that can protect you from losing your principal in these volatile times, where even if your timing is all wrong, you don't lose a dime in the stock market. And if you're right, you win even bigger. But before we get there, let's have a look at the second time-tested pattern of investing that will protect your savings and help you maximize your freedom fund as you build true wealth. A rebalancing act. David Swensen and Bert Malkiel sometimes take different approaches to finance. But there's one lesson they both told me, and all other experts I've interviewed agree on this. To be a successful investor, you need to rebalance your portfolio at regular intervals. You have to take a look at your buckets and make sure your asset allocations are still in the right ratio. From time to time, a particular part of one of your buckets may grow significantly and disproportionately to the rest of your portfolio and throw you out of balance. Say you started out with 60% of your money in your risk/growth bucket and 40% of your money in your security bucket. 6 months later, you check your account balances and find out that your risk/growth investments have taken off, and they no longer represent 60% of your total assets. It's more like 75%, and now your security bucket only holds 25% instead of 40%. You need to rebalance. Like dollar-cost averaging, rebalancing is a technique that seems simple at first, but can take a lot of discipline. And unless you remember how important and effective rebalancing is in maximizing your profits and protecting against your losses, you'll find yourself getting caught up in the momentum of what seems to be working in the moment. You'll be hypnotized into the illusion that your current investment success will continue forever, and that the current market, stock market, real estate market, bond market, commodity market, can only go in one direction, up. This pattern of emotion and psychology is what causes people to stay with an investment too long and end up losing the very gains they were so proud of originally. It takes discipline to sell something when it's still growing and invest that money into something that's down in price or growing more slowly, but this willpower is what makes someone a great investor. A powerful example of this principle was the day I was visiting with investment icon Carl Icahn. It was just announced that he had made a profit of nearly $800 million on his Netflix stocks. He'd bought the majority of his shares at $58 the previous year and was now selling them for $341 a share. His son Brett, who works with Carl and who originally brought this investment opportunity to him, protested the selling of the stock. He was certain that Netflix had more growth ahead of it. Carl said he agreed, but that their portfolio needed to be rebalanced. If they didn't rebalance, they could find themselves losing some of the extraordinary profits that they gained. Carl took his 487% profit and reinvested those profits into other assets in his portfolio, while keeping 2% of his Netflix shares to take advantage of any potential growth. Some of that money he used to buy $2.38 trillion in a little company called Apple, which he believed was undervalued at the time. He sold high and he bought low, and rebalancing was a key part of that process. If billionaires do it, maybe you should too. So what do you do if you find that you're out of balance? You were 60% risk/growth and 40% security, but as we said, your stocks have soared, and you're now 75%/25% as a result. In this case, your rebalancing action plan requires you to shift your regular contributions to the risk/growth bucket into security until the 25% is back up to 40%. Or you have to divert the profits or even sell some of the growth/risk investments that are booming and reinvest them back into bonds or first trust deeds or whatever combination of assets you're keeping in your security bucket. But this can be agonizing, especially if, say, REITs are roaring or international stocks are suddenly going through the roof. Who wants to jump off when you're riding a rocket? All you want is more. But you have to take some of those assets off the table to reduce your exposure to risk and make certain that you keep some of the gains or profits you've made. Just like dollar-cost averaging, you've got to take your emotions out of the picture. Portfolio rebalancing makes you do the opposite of what you want to do. In investing, that's usually the right thing to do. Let's take a real-world example. Say it's the summer of 2013 and the S&P 500 index is lurching back to record-breaking levels, while bonds are still coughing up meager returns. Do you want to sell your stocks and buy bonds? No way. But the rules of rebalancing say that's exactly what you have to do to keep your original ratio, even though a voice inside you is shouting, "Hey, stupid, why are you putting money into those dogs?" The rules of rebalancing don't guarantee you're going to win every time. But rebalancing means you're going to win more often. It increases your probabilities of success. And probabilities, through time, are what dominate the success or failure of your investment life. Sophisticated investors also rebalance within markets and asset classes, and that can be even more painful. Say you owned a lot of Apple stock back in July 2012. It would have seemed insane to sell those shares, which had been surging, up 44% in the previous two quarters, and were worth more than $614 per share. But if Apple stock is dominating your portfolio, remember it has grown 44% and it's put you out of balance, likely significantly, the rules of rebalancing say that you have to sell some Apple to get your ratio right. Ouch. But you would have thanked yourself the same time next year. Why? Apple stocks took a roller coaster ride, plummeting from a high of $705 per share in September 2012 to a low of $385 the following April, and ending at $414 in July 2013, a 41% loss that you avoided because you rebalanced. How often should you rebalance? Most investors rebalance once or twice a year. Mary Callahan Erdos of J.P. Morgan told me she believes rebalancing is such a powerful tool that she does it constantly. What does that mean? That's as often as your portfolio gets out of whack with the plan that you originally put in place, or the adjusted plan based on what's happened in the world. And that shouldn't be set. It should be constant evaluation, but not an obsessive evaluation. Burt Malkiel, on the other hand, likes to ride the momentum of bull markets. He advises rebalancing only once a year. "I don't want to just be trigger happy and sell something because it's going up," he said. "I like to give my good asset class at least a year in the run." However often you do it, rebalancing can not only protect you from too much risk, it can dramatically increase your returns. Just like dollar cost averaging, the discipline once again makes you invest in underperforming assets when their prices are low, so that you own lots of them when their prices go up. Your profits get passed along to the other players on your team, like the ball in an LA Lakers motion offense or relay runners passing the baton on the way to victory at the finish line. The number of times you rebalance does have an impact on your taxes, however. If your investments are not in a tax-deferred environment and you rebalance an asset you have owned less than a year, you'll typically pay ordinary income taxes instead of the lower long-term investment tax rate. If rebalancing seems a little intimidating, the good news is this work can be done for you automatically by Stronghold or any other fiduciary advisor you choose. They'll guide you on being tax efficient while still tapping into the power of rebalancing. So now you've learned two time-tested ways to reduce your risk and increase your returns just through asset allocation. But there's still one final trick that can take the sting out of your losses and your taxes. It's harvest time. So what happens when it's portfolio rebalancing time and you have to sell some stocks that aren't in your 401k or other tax-advantaged account? Uncle Sam will have his hand out for part of your profits. Are the capital gains taxes making you crazy? Listen, there's a perfectly legal way for you to lower those taxes while keeping your portfolio balanced called tax loss harvesting. The benefit you get by tax loss harvesting is that you reduce your taxes and that increases your net return. In essence, you use some of your inevitable losses to maximize your net gains. Burt Malkiel believes that tax loss harvesting can increase your annual rate of return by as much as 1% per year, so it's certainly worth investigating. Billionaires and big institutions increase their returns this way, although few ordinary investors take advantage of these powerful techniques. Few know of them, and even those who do may think rebalancing and tax harvesting sound too complicated to try on their own. Not to worry. You can get access to your own fiduciary advisor or access to software that will make it as easy as ordering a pizza online or at least updating your Facebook security settings. Now, bear in mind, my goal was to make investing simple for everyone, and this section is probably the one that tested your brain the most. So first, congratulations on sticking with me. This stuff feels very technical, and most people avoid it like the plague. If you feel a bit overwhelmed by asset allocation and the idea of dollar cost averaging, rebalancing, and tax loss harvesting, I want you to know all of this can be automated for you. But it's still helpful to understand what these strategies are and the principal reasons why they're effective. Just remember four things from this section of the book. 1. Asset allocation is everything, so you want to diversify between your security bucket and your risk/growth bucket. You want to diversify across asset classes, markets, and time. 2. You don't want to hesitate to get in the market trying to have perfect timing. Instead, use dollar-cost averaging and know that volatility can be your friend, providing opportunities to buy investments cheaply when the market is down. This technique will increase your portfolio's value when the markets come back up. 3. Have a dream bucket that gives you emotional juice and excitement so you can experience the benefits of your investing prowess in the short term and midterm instead of just someday far in the future. 4. Use rebalancing and tax harvesting to maximize your returns and minimize losses. When I first brought up that I was going to teach asset allocation and these additional refining strategies in this book, many of my friends in the financial world said, "You're crazy, it's just too complex. The average person won't understand it and few will even take the time to listen to it." My answer was simple. I'm here for the few who do versus the many who talk. It takes hunger to push yourself to master something new. But in the case of mastering investment principles, it truly is worth the effort. Even if you have to listen to something a couple of times to get it down, the rewards can be immense. It could mean the savings of years of your life without having to work. More importantly, mastering these will give you a greater sense of empowerment and peace of mind today. Mastering this section is a lot like trying to learn to drive a stick shift car for the first time. What? I'm supposed to figure out how to use the accelerator, the brake, the clutch, the stick, the rearview mirror, the steering wheel, and watch the road too? Are you kidding me? But after a while, you're driving the car without thinking about it. Well, we've already come a long way together on the 7 simple steps to financial freedom. Let's check in where we are now. 1. You've made the most important financial decision of your life by deciding on a percentage of your income to save, your freedom fund, and automatically investing it for compounded interest. Have you acted on this yet by setting up an automated account? If not, do it today. 2. You've learned the rules of investing and how to avoid Wall Street's 8 biggest marketing/investment myths. You're becoming the chess player, not the chess piece. 3. You've taken the third step on your path to financial freedom by making the game winnable. There are 3 stages within this step. 1, you've calculated your top 3 financial goals, which for many people are financial security, vitality, and independence. 2, you have a plan with real numbers. And 3, you've looked for and are implementing ways to speed it up so you can enjoy your rewards even sooner. 4. In this section, you've made the most important investment decision of your life by allocating your assets into a portfolio with a specific percentage into different buckets, security versus risk/growth/dream. You've diversified and you have a plan that will fuel your financial dreams. You're already light years ahead of other Americans or investors anywhere in the world when it comes to understanding your finances and managing your money. And if you're anything like the men and women who have been gracious enough to read this book in manuscript form, you might already be so excited by what you've learned that you're jumping up and down and grabbing your friends by the collars to show them some of the ways you've learned that can add hundreds of thousands of dollars or even millions to their lifetime investment earnings. So you might be surprised to learn you ain't seen nothing yet. I promise you the best is still to come. And everything from here on out is much easier than this section. Now that you're thinking and acting like an insider, I'll show you how to truly invest like one. Let's find out how you can be successful in any financial environment, and how you can tap into the power of the upside without the downside, creating a lifetime income stream. Section 5. Upside without the downside. Create a lifetime income plan. Chapter 5.1. Invincible, Unsinkable, Unconquerable, the All-Season Strategy. Invincibility lies in the defense. Sun Tzu, The Art of War. There are events in our lives that forever shape our view of the world. Mile markers on our journey that, whether we know it or not, have given us the lens through which we now see the world. And what we choose to allow those events to mean to us will ripple through our behavior and decision-making for the rest of our lives. If you grew up in the Roaring Twenties, your life was shaped by prosperity and grandeur. It was the days of the Great Gatsby. But if you grew up during the Great Depression, your life was shaped by struggle and anxiety. Growing up in a severe economic winter forced you to become a survivor. Today's generations have a completely different experience of the world. They have grown up in incredible prosperity, even if their incomes don't land them in the 1%. We get all the benefits of living in an on-demand world. We can have groceries delivered to our door, deposit checks from the comfort of our pajamas, and watch thousands of television channels whenever and wherever we choose. My granddaughter hasn't learned to tie her shoes, but at age 4 she can navigate an iPad as well as I can, and she already knows that Google can answer any question she has on a moment's notice. This is also the era of possibility, where a startup like WhatsApp, with only 50 or so employees, can disrupt an industry and sell for $19 billion. Without a doubt, our lives are shaped by the seasons and events through which we live. But more importantly, it's the meaning we give those events that will determine our ultimate trajectory. The 1970s. Ray Dalio, now 65, came of age in the 1970s. It was a time of violent change in seasons and arguably the worst economic environment since the Great Depression. High unemployment was accompanied by massive inflation, causing interest rates to skyrocket into the high teens. Remember, I shared with you that my first mortgage coming out of the inflation of the 1970s was a whopping 18% interest. There was also an oil shock in 1973, as an embargo caught the United States off guard, causing oil prices to rise from $2.10 a barrel to $10.40. No one was prepared for this. Just a few years later, the government imposed odd-even rationing, where people were forced not only to wait in line at the pump for hours, but they also were only allowed to get in line to gas up on odd or even days of the month. It was a season of political strife, as faith in our government dwindled after Vietnam and Watergate. In 1974, President Nixon was forced to resign and was later pardoned by his successor, former Vice President Gerald Ford, for any wrongdoing. Wink, wink. In 1971, Ray Dalio was fresh out of college and a clerk on the New York Stock Exchange. He saw bull and bear markets come in short bursts and create massive volatility in different asset classes. Tides changed quickly and unexpectedly. Ray saw the huge opportunity, but was equally or even more aware of the enormous risks that came with the territory. As a result, he became ferociously committed to understanding how all these scenarios and movements were intertwined. By understanding how the bigger economic machine works, he would ultimately figure out how to avoid those cataclysmic losses that doom so many investors. All of these events shaped young Ray Dalio to ultimately become the world's largest hedge fund manager. But the seminal moment that shaped Ray's investment philosophy most happened in August 1971, when a surprise address from President Nixon would change the financial world as we know it. A Nixon Night. All three major networks had their broadcasting unexpectedly interrupted as the President of the United States suddenly appeared in living rooms across America. In a serious and agitated state, he declared, "I directed Secretary John Connolly to suspend temporarily the convertibility of the dollar to gold." In one brief sentence, just 14 words, President Nixon announced to the world that the dollar as we knew it would never be the same again. No longer would the dollar's value be tied directly to gold. Remember Fort Knox? It used to be that for every paper dollar, the government would have the equivalent value of physical gold stocked safely away. And with Nixon's declaration, the dollar was now just paper. Imagine you had a treasure chest filled with gold, only to open it one day and find a yellow paper sticky note that simply said, "I owe you." Nixon was saying that the dollar's value would now be determined by whatever we, the market, deemed its worth. This news also shocked foreign governments that held huge sums of dollars, believing that they had the option to convert to gold at any time. Overnight, Nixon removed that option from the table, once again living up to his nickname, Tricky Dick. Oh, he also issued a 10% surcharge on all imports to keep the United States competitive. And like a blizzard in late October, Nixon's address signified a change in seasons of epic proportions. Ray was watching the president's address from his apartment and couldn't believe what he was hearing. What were the implications of Nixon's decision to take the United States off the gold standard? What did it mean for markets? What did this mean for the U.S. dollar and its position in the world? One thing Ray thought for sure. It means the definition of money is different. I would have thought maybe it's a crisis. He was sure that when he walked onto the trading floor the next morning, the market was sure to plummet. He was wrong. To his amazement, the Dow Jones was up nearly 4% that next day as stocks soared to the highest single-day gain in history. Gold also skyrocketed as well. It was completely counterintuitive to what most experts would expect. After all, we had just broken our sacred promise to the world that these pieces of paper with dead presidents on them were actually worth something of value. Surely this change wouldn't inspire confidence in the U.S. economy or government. This was a head-scratcher. This market boom eventually became known as the Nixon Rally. But it wasn't all great news. By letting the value of the dollar be determined by whatever we all think it's worth, an inflationary storm brewed on the horizon. Ray elaborates. But then in 1973, it set up the ingredient for the first oil shock. We never had an oil shock before. We never had inflation to worry about before. And all those things became, in a sense, surprises. And I developed a modus operandi to expect surprises. It's the surprises that we can't afford or stomach. It's the next 2008. It's the next shock wave, sure to rumble through our markets. The Nixon rally was a catalyst for Ray. The beginning of a lifelong obsession to prepare for anything, the unknown around every corner. His mission was to study every conceivable market environment and what that meant for certain investments. This is his core operating principle that allows him to manage the world's largest hedge fund. Not espousing that he knows all. Quite the opposite. He is insatiably hungry to continually discover what he doesn't yet know. Because what's obvious is obviously wrong. The prevailing thought is usually the wrong thought, and since the world is continually changing and evolving, Ray's journey to uncover the unknown is a never-ending endeavor. The Ultimate Investor Nirvana. What you are about to listen to could very well be the most important chapter in the entire book. Yes, yes, I know, I said that before. And it's true that if you don't know the rules of the game, you will get crushed. And if you don't think like an insider, conventional wisdom will lead you to accept the fate of the herd. And if you don't decide on a percentage and automate your savings, you will never get the rocket off the ground. Yet I wholeheartedly believe that there is nothing in this book that tops Ray's strategy for the largest returns possible with the least amount of risk. This is Ray's specialty. This is what Ray is known for throughout the world. The portfolio you are going to learn about would have provided you with extraordinary returns, nearly 10% annually, 9.88% to be exact, net of fees, for the last 40 years, 1974 through 2013. Extraordinary safety. You would have made money exactly 85% of the time over the last 40 years. There were only 6 losses during those 40 years, and the average loss was only minus 1.47%. 2 of the 6 losses were break-even for all intents and purposes, as they were 0.03% or less. So from a practical perspective, you would have lost money 4 times in 40 years. Extraordinarily low volatility. The worst loss you would have experienced during those 40 years was only minus 3.93%. Remember Warren Buffett's ultimate laws of investing? Rule 1, don't lose money. Rule 2, see Rule 1. The application of this rule is Ray's greatest genius. This is why he is the Leonardo da Vinci of investing. Anybody can show you a portfolio in hindsight where you could have taken gigantic risks and received big rewards. And if you didn't fold like a paper bag when the portfolio was down 50% or 60%, you would have ended up with big returns. This advice is good marketing, but it's not reality for most people. I couldn't fathom that there was a way for the individual investor like you and me to have stock market-like gains, yet simultaneously have a strategy that would greatly limit both the frequency and size of the losses